remarks were the culmination of a series of missteps by Schemmel that left both his personal credibility and that of UNRWA at a low ebb in Gaza. The director of UNRWA took up his position in 2017, a year before the Trump administration cut U.S. funding to the agency. His arrival, however, soon coincided with the slashing of UNRWA's budget. It became hugely unpopular when the agency revealed plans for hundreds of job reductions in 2018 following Trump's cruel cuts. Then UNRWA announced it would reform its food aid system, sparking fears that tens of thousands would sink deeper into poverty. And finally, the agency was woefully underprepared in May, when it was suddenly faced with tens of thousands of people displaced by the Israeli regime's assault. Indeed, it was not only underprepared, for a while UNRWA staffers actively tried to prevent the desperate displaced from entering the agency premises. Nasreen and her children were among their number after surviving a close call. They had been expecting it. Every night of the last aggression, I would place my children in different corners of the house, Nasreen told the electronic intifada. But on evening of May 14th, after bombing intensified, we gathered in one room. We were 19 people, including my husband, daughter-in-law, and her child. I believe that if we die together, no one would have to suffer mourning the others, unquote. It was a wise decision. Heavy Israeli regime bombing in the area on the night between May 14th and May 15th caused the house to nearly collapse, but no one inside was harmed. And that was when they decided to leave for the relative safety of an UNRWA facility. At the Jabalia school, however, Nasreen found hundreds of other desperate people and the gates locked. Muhammad Awadallah, 33, was there too, fleeing with his wife and four daughters from an intense bombardment near their home in the village of Om Nasr in northern Gaza. He was not going to let some closed gates stop him from reaching relative safety. When they refused to receive us, we had no choice but to break the gate, he told the electronic intifada, adding, we have no choice but to protect our children. An UNRWA spokesperson considered that the agency had been unprepared and was not at first willing to host people displaced in the assault. There were instructions from management that no one was allowed access to schools, but we changed these decisions within the first hour of people's displacement, Adnan Abu Hasna told the electronic intifada. The escalation was sudden, and there had been no plan to receive displaced people. But UNRWA has always supported displaced people, unquote. Contingency plan or not, Nasreen now fears for her and her children's lives. Her house remains without secure walls or a full roof, and as the security situation in Gaza grows steadily worse, she worries about their safety. She has received no support from UNRWA, apart from some cans of fish, she told the electronic intifada. Nothing has arrived to help her clothe her children or protect them through any kind of COVID-19 prevention. Today, the entire family shelters in just one room. It's a desperate situation with no end in sight. Abu Hasna considered that not enough was done at the beginning, but he insisted agency had provided psychological support in part through the summer camps that saw people like Nasreen forced out of schools in July to tens of thousands of children across Gaza. UNRWA is also providing some financial assistance, he said. For thousands of people who remain displaced, such words ring hollow. The behavior of officials like Schemmel has left Palestinians in Gaza deeply suspicious of the agency and its motives.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The holy prophet of Islam is the example
Self-purification is the most significant
Imamat yek asl zinde ast dar tarikh Islam
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars. In the book, The Inner Voice, Allama Sayyid Said Akhtar Rizvi aptly explains the need for a man to understand his purpose in life and to be able to ponder over some of the important aspects of our journey in reaching nearness to Allah. Today, we will read to you an excerpt of this book. Stay with us. Miracle of Quran. Do they not then earnestly seek to understand the Quran, or are their hearts locked up by them? Quran chapter 47, verse 24. The Qur'an is a miracle given by God to the Holy Prophet of Islam. It is a miracle both of the style and of the deep knowledge and pure truth which is being unfolded every day. The difference between all other miracles and the Qur'an is that the former were only for those who witnessed them. For us, their news, which may be believed or suspected according to the trend of mind. But the Qur'an is in our hands, a book complete in itself. It claims that it is revealed and brings the proof within itself. Arabs in the time of the Prophet were proud of their language. The Qur'an silenced them with its sublime literature, challenging them to bring like of even one surah, chapter. The Arabs, who called other nations dumb, became dumb themselves when the Qur'an put its challenge before them. They resorted to sword. They waged war after war. They inflicted sufferings and suffered themselves. Had it been within their power to bring a chapter like the Qur'an, all this trouble would have been unnecessary. No sane man will choose a difficult way in preference to the easier one. It was the highest quality of the Qur'anic language which baffled them and is still baffling its antagonists. History records that many people tried to meet the challenge of the Qur'an, but had to admit that it is right when it says that nobody can bring its like. Also, on the side of knowledge and truth, its miracles are not exhausted yet. There are many examples that a verse remained a puzzle for the commentators until the advent of scientific discoveries which made its meaning clear. To give a tangible example, in the Surah Al-Mu'min it says, And Pharaoh said, O Haman, build for me a tower that I may reach the avenues of the heavens, and may mount to Moses' God. Quran chapter 40, verse 36. As it is, there was no mention of Haman in the previous books. People used to wonder who was that Haman. they may be forgiven because nobody knew before recent discoveries that Amun was the name of the great Egyptian deity, the king of gods, patron of the most powerful pharaohs, and preeminently the national god. Its high priest also was called Amun, and was responsible for all the religious buildings and temples. What could have been more natural for Pharaoh, when intending to build the tower to see God of Moses, than to ask the Amun's priest, himself known as Amun, to arrange it? These scientific miracles of today are sufficient to make a man believe that this book is a book of God containing the eternal truth. Thank you so much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was an excerpt from the book Inner Voice by Allama Sayyid Said Akhtar Rizvi. Our website is parsetoday.com. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parsetoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
regionalism has taken form out of the multipolar world order with the characteristics of spontaneous movements grown out of international regions. As the world struggles to adjust to the transforming and globalizing trends, regional countries find it pragmatically essential to cooperate locally. In return, modern regionalism offers them a more comprehensive and multifaceted solution compared to regional integrations of the past. It goes far beyond the realms of free trade and economic development and addresses environmental, social, and security issues as well. The success of regionalism in Europe is a good testament for nations who are still hesitant about regional cooperation despite the existence of common economic, cultural, and geopolitical characteristics and a need for greater regional empowerment. In the economic sphere, new regionalism has been extremely effective in helping to secure markets and providing economic strength through the creation of regional trade agreements. In line with these transforming developments, the Islamic Republic of Iran has entered into a few regionalization processes itself. As part of this new strategy, it has put cooperation and convergence with the Eurasian Economic Union on its agenda. The EAEU bloc offers the Islamic Republic a combination of dependable trade, diplomacy, and counter-Western alignment that could be meaningful to Tehran in its international relations. Few years, and especially throughout the coronavirus pandemic, China has replaced Europe as the main trade partner of Iran. This has been one of the few positive experiences in the international arena for Iran in recent times. Building on this positive experience, Tehran has shaken up its economic diplomacy by looking north in addition to the east as a way to diversify its partnerships and regional cooperation. For a more in-depth look at Iran's new regional policies and its goals in cooperating with Russia in the framework of the Eurasian Economic Union, stay with us on this week's edition of Iran Today. The U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear agreement, or JCPOA, during Trump years and its extensive sanctions against Iran, in addition to Russia's geopolitical difficulties with the West, have led these two countries to expand their cooperation within the framework of the Eurasian Economic Union. So far, the results show that aside from the economic benefits of the agreement, its political and geopolitical goals are also of high significance for both Iran and Russia. Mr. Zangane is member of the Parliamentary Plan and Budget Committee and spokesperson for the Committee on a Production Leap. He's also a researcher, economist, and Allama University professor. Let's hear him out.
I think that if we focus our attention on Eastern countries, especially those in Central Asia, East Asia, as well as Eastern Europe, instead of focusing on the West, we can definitely benefit from their considerable economic potential. As you are aware, we are facing a lot of challenges in interacting with Western countries because of the United States and Israel's attitude toward Iran. But the same challenges don't exist in our ties with these 10 nations. That creates a great opportunity for our economy.
Iran is an important consumer market for the region, and the development of relations with this country is of high importance for the EAEU members. Given the ongoing illegal US and EU sanctions on Iran, its economy is now seeking the Eurasian markets to replace lost European trade and investment. Mr. Mohaqiq Nia is a specialist in economy. He'll be sharing his views with us.
Last year, while almost the entire world saw negative economic growth because of the coronavirus, China's economy grew by 9.8%. Considering how big China's economy already is, a country whose GDP is $14 trillion, a 10% economic growth is very significant. That makes China an emerging power. It needs countries like Iran to continue that growth. We also need to correct the unbalanced view toward the West and also look at the East. we can define a win-win situation which will ultimately benefit the people. That would be made possible only if we bring investors from the east to Iran.
The EAEU region is located at the eastern end of Europe, bounded by the Arctic in the north, the Pacific Ocean to the east, and Eastern Asia, West Asia, and parts of Central Asia to the south. This region accounts for about 15% of the world's land mass, 2.4% of the world's population, and 2.2% of the world's GDP. Mr. Modabbir is a specialist counselor on the Russian Federation and Eurasian Economic Union, as well as the Shanghai Security and Economic Organization. Let's hear him out.
The Eurasian Economic Union was an upgraded version of the customs union initiated by Russian President Vladimir Putin with the aim of breaking Western sanctions and restricting the unilateral pressure the US imposed on emerging and powerful nations. You know that the Russian Federation is also a member of the World Trade Organization, but because of the Americans' tendency to pressure emerging powers, such as the Russian Federation, the Russian side initiated the union with its allies. The Eurasian Economic Union has grown to the point where more than 40 countries are now in line to join.
The member states established the union based on a certain understanding of their long-term economic objectives, creating a single market for trading goods, services, and capital distribution of labor forces among member states, as well as the highly ambitious goal of creating a customs union.
One of the most important capacities and programs in the Eurasian Economic Union, which is exactly like the World Trade Organization, is the abolition of customs tariffs between its members, and most importantly, the investment program in the member states aimed at the coordination of the growth and development of the Eurasian Economic Union. We have a very important clause in the union's documents called knowledge exchange. The member states can use this opportunity to exchange knowledge amongst themselves. They can also exchange workers and get them work visas within the union.
It's noteworthy that the interim agreement enabling the formation of a free trade area between the EAEU and the Islamic Republic was signed 9 days after the Trump administration withdrew from the Iran nuclear agreement in May 2018, and it came into effect on October the 27th, 2019. The FTA will become permanent within 3 years if pending talks work out. The objectives of the agreement are to liberalize and facilitate the trade of goods between the parties, primarily through reduction or elimination of tariff and non-tariff barriers relating to 502 goods and services by the Eurasian Economic Union and 360 items by Iran. Since 2018, the agreement with the union has significantly increased Iran's exports to the EAEU and has been a major factor in boosting Iranian non-oil exports during the imposed U.S. sanctions. After the original FTA came into effect, Iran-EAEU trade immediately rose nearly 30% and initially reached $330 million a month.
There are almost complete package of different areas we can have economic exchange with. Most of these countries are very fertile for agricultural products and are rich in water resources. Agricultural products constitute the majority of our imports. We can even do rental farming there, meaning that our farmers can take control of lands there and cultivate their crops. This also provides us with a unique opportunity for the transport sector, because Iran sits on a transit network to Europe on one side and the Far East through Russia, Kazakhstan, and Kyrgyzstan.
The
US has changed into a weaker country today. Those who are under the American media's hypnosis need to wake up and act according to their national interests. It's up to us whether or not we are restricted in the regional deals. Why didn't we join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization? There were some who thought that we first need to make deals with the US because it might cause problems for us. We used to remind them that there are only two key nations in the SCO, namely Russia and China, and that making deals with them warrants our permanent membership in the treaty, but they would refuse to wake up from their illusions.
To remove obstacles and further ease the trade process, Iran has stressed the need to abandon the US dollar in settlements and switch to national currencies. The EAEU has repeatedly stated that it is consistently moving towards this goal. Similar statements and practices are presently witnessed in bilateral relations between Iran and some EAEU member states.
The other issue is the national currencies and exchanging them with the other member states of the Eurasian Economic Union. This has already started. Currently, a majority of the financial exchanges that take place between the member states are denominated in their national currency. This creates a good opportunity for the Islamic Republic of Iran to reduce its dependence on the dollar to a great extent. This has also happened too. It's interesting to note that Russia has limited its currency's dependence on the dollar by some 50%, meaning that about 49% of its currency is dependent on the dollar.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more on rapprochement between Iran and the EAEU right after a quick diversion into world media.
Hello and welcome to the news part of the program with me, Sarah Adema. Today we will get into different media outlets to check out some reviews about the prospects of trade with Eurasian countries. Our first review from Newsweek is about a recent poll that shows Iranians losing faith in Biden and the West have hope for Raisi and the East. Most Iranians view U.S. President Joe Biden's policies toward their nation as being rooted in hostility, while majorities also had hope that their new political leader, President Ebrahim Raisi, would fulfill come through with key campaign promises, according to a recent poll. With this came a broader geopolitical shift of support away from the West and looking toward the East. The survey conducted by the University of Maryland Center for International and Security Studies at Maryland in conjunction with the independent Toronto-based Iran Poll asked 1,001 Iranians their views on a range of subjects. As to rate Biden's policies, rated from a 0 of completely hostile to a 10 of completely friendly, 67% of respondents provided a score in the 7 to 4 range, more than half of which, 33.5%, chose 0. The second most popular answer was 5, neither friendly nor hostile, with 26.1%, while all scores above this were minimal. A majority of 44.1% that Iran should try more to strengthen its relations with Asian countries such as Russia, China, and India, and 39.1% saying the same for European countries like Germany, France, and the United Kingdom. We have another review here from Modern Diplomacy that reads, "The Emerging Eastern Axis and the Future of JCPOA." Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh recently said that Tehran would further strengthen its ties with Moscow via strategic partnership. Said Khatibzadeh, the initial arrangements of this document, entitled the Global Agreement for Cooperation between Iran and Russia, have been concluded. The This agreement will be similar in nature to the agreement signed by Iran with China in March 2021, dubbed as the Strategic Cooperation Pact, which sought to enhance economic and strategic relations. China would invest $400 billion in infrastructure and oil and gas sector, while also strengthening security ties. Commenting on the same, Khatibzadeh also said that an eastern axis is emerging between Russia, Iran, and China. Closer ties with Russia are important from an economic strategic point of view and also to reduce Iran's dependence upon China. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, on the eve of his Russia visit from October 5th to 6th, 2021, also stated that Iran, while strengthening ties, would not be excessively dependent upon either country. Our last review of the day comes from Tehran Times that writes, Iran and Kazakhstan aiming for $6 billion in annual trade. Iranian capital Tehran hosted an Iran-Kazakhstan business forum in October 2021, during which the two sides stressed the need for removing visa issuance and transportation obstacles to realize a $6 billion annual trade target. The business forum was attended by senior officials from both sides, including the head of Iran Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture, Olam Hossein Shafi'i, and Khairat Turabayev, Kazakhstan's Vice Minister of Trade and Integration. Speaking in the meeting, Shafi'i underlined the two countries' common cultural and religious backgrounds and said, our relations with neighboring countries have a special priority for the government, and Kazakhstan, as one of the largest countries in Central Asia, has an important place for us in Iran's foreign policy. That's it for me in today's edition. Bye-bye.
The idea of rapprochement between Iran and the EAEU has to be considered in the context of Iran's broader persuasive efforts towards greater regionalism and Eurasian cooperation. Tehran's activities with two other regional bodies, the Economic Cooperation Organization, ECO, and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, is indicative of what lies ahead with the EAEU. Tehran's SCO pivot has been consistent with its long-standing balancing acts against Washington, and its outreach to the EAEU reflects the same mindset.
In the current situation, when we are under sanctions, I think one of the best strategies is that while we are continuing negotiations with the West and sitting at the negotiation table, as we are not afraid of dialogue based on the principles of the Islamic Republic and the revolution, the 13th administration must also have a special look to the East. And certainly if we can gain membership in the international treaties with regional unions in the East, like Eurasia, ASEAN, and etc., we can actually increase our power in the region. And that in itself has a deterrent power over the West.
Iranian policymakers are confident that the dependence of Iran and EAEU countries on trade with each other brings additional regional security in the process.
The Eurasian Economic Union is an economic arm that strengthens its member states. We don't consider it a mere economic pact. When it comes to improving the standards of members, there is also the issue of security. We have the northwest of Iran, both the northern and southern Caucasus, which is a strategic region where the American and Western sides have always wanted to incite sedition. They're now using Turkey as a tool to disrupt the region under various pretexts. Turkey is also a member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Eastern nations, by forging security alliances, seek to stand against the Western parties that want to disrupt the peace in the region.
Judging by what both Iran and the EAEU member states say, all the sides are intent on replacing the interim agreement with a permanent one. Iran, with its large population, is viewed as a strong economic power. In terms of nominal GDP, its economy ranks 22nd globally. Iran is also endowed with 9.5% of the world's total oil reserves and ranks fourth in the world in this category. According to data released recently by Iran's Customs Administration, IRICA, the value of non-oil trade between Iran and the members of the EAEU exceeded $1.6 billion in the first 4 months of the current Iranian calendar year, that's March 21st to July the 22nd, to register 93% year-on-year growth compared to 2020. In total, Iran exported over $385 million worth of commodities to the EAEU countries during that period, which accounts for an increase of 46%. This is while Iran's import from the EAEU reached $1.25 billion in the same period. Moreover, according to data published by the EAEU's executive body so far, nearly half of Iran's exports have gone to Russia, 40% to Armenia, and 10% to Kazakhstan. These export items include fruits, vegetables, nuts, cement, ferrous metal products, petroleum products, and natural or liquefied gas. On the other end, nearly three-quarters of Iran's EAEU imports have come from Russia, under 20% from Kazakhstan, and 5% from Armenia. To take the next step, the Iranian government has announced that it's planning to reach $48 billion in non-oil exports to 15 neighboring countries, including Armenia, Kazakhstan, and Russia, in the near term.
In general, we need to increase our non-oil exports to $200 billion annually. This should be a short-term or at least a medium-term plan for us. We must not leave it to the long term. Achieving this target would turn us into a developed nation. All the economic fluctuations we're experiencing are because we lack sufficient exports and income. We need to start moving toward that goal. To that aim, it's essential that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs changes its approach and sets quantifiable goals and holds our embassies accountable so we hit the target. And they must take measures to solve the problems and take effective steps to facilitate that.
The Iranian ambassador to Russia, Kazem Jalali, has praised the level of ties between Iran and the EAEU, pointing out Iran's efforts in the field of logistics and the fact that Iran can facilitate Eurasian trade through regional corridors. Jalali was referring to a couple of rail and sea routes and noted two very important border points of the Rasht Astara and Chabahar Zahedan railways are currently being completed.
In almost all important economic or cultural meetings in the world, the Islamic Republic of Iran is on agenda. It's possible that Russia, Eurasian countries, or those in ASEAN would give up some of their own economic interests to get closer to and do business with the Islamic Republic. There have been many examples that this did happen. There are many banks in China, Russia, and other Asian countries that are doing business with Iran, despite all the economic sanctions in place against Tehran. This shows that the Islamic Republic is important to them and that they choose to pay the price of getting closer to Iran.
Indeed, Iran's prime geostrategic position makes it a key node along the Eurasian transport corridors. For example, Russia and India have both been working on the infrastructure project of the International North-South Transportation Corridor, INSTC, which is now starting to become operational. The multimodal route allows transport of goods from India to Iran's Chabahar port by sea, then by rail across Iran with connections east to Afghanistan and west to Turkey. Further north, it reaches the Iranian Anzali-Caspian seaport and free trade zone just north of Tehran. As such, Iran can become an ideal partner in unblocking its own connecting corridors while developing new transport and energy routes in the South Caucasus.
Another very important feature of the Eurasian Economic Union, which creates a tremendous opportunity for not only the Islamic Republic, but all member states, which is also present in the Security, Military and Cultural Shanghai Cooperation Organization, is the issue of transportation. Today, the international system prioritizes transit diplomacy. The most urgent issue in economic pacts is transit. Currently, the countries that are opposing the U.S. are looking for alternatives to replace transit routes, one of the most promising of which is a north-south corridor that passes through the territory of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
As far as the EAEU interests, interests are concerned, analysts report that in addition to economic and security opportunities, Iran represents serious potentials for the Union's expansion. On the one hand, Iran will be the first non-Soviet country in the group, paving the way for other nations' membership. On the other hand, gaining access to warm waters on the Iranian shores of the Persian Gulf provides a significant geopolitical opening for the Eurasian Economic Union's member states. That's all for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do tune in again at the same times next week and each week after. Bye for now.
That animals might have the potential to help tackle climate change? Strange indeed, but that seems to be the case according to scientists. The sheep on a remote Scottish island have a special diet that consists mainly of seaweed. This feature is what scientists are hoping can help reduce global warming. Sheep usually feed on grass, and the process contributes to methane emissions. But scientists say the sheep in Orkneys are unique because they are because of spending the winter eating only the marine plants. Listen to one researcher explaining whether feeding seaweed into the sheep diet can actually help reduce gas emissions.
The main thing at the moment is we need to absolutely prove, one, which seaweed is going to be the best for this, what amount of seaweed into the feed gives the best effect, and then can you scale that up to a level where you would actually have an effect on the overall UK farming?
If proven, the Scottish sheep and their unique diet could lead to a breakthrough in methods for livestock breeding, which is a major source of greenhouse gases. Methane is about 30 times more powerful than carbon dioxide in trapping heat in the atmosphere. Clarion, a homemade polar bear whose mission is to raise awareness of climate change in a 500-kilometer pilgrimage to Glasgow. The 3-meter polar bear is work of British furniture maker Bamber Hoss. The bear weighs 17 kilograms and is made of bamboo, willow, and tissue paper. Hoss started his journey with Clarion from his hometown of Bishop's Castle in England to Glasgow. They accomplished their spectacular journey ahead of the United Nations COP26 climate conference in the Scottish city. Hoss says Clarion is a symbol of melting Arctic ice caps due to global warming.
He's called Clarion. Clarion the bear is not a bear. He is a metaphor. He's a symbol. It is a very obvious symbol that a polar bear represents the Arctic, not the Antarctic, and that is where, you know, some of the problems are with melting ice caps, not all the problems, because they're elsewhere as well.
Hoss says his aim is to encourage people to pay attention to climate change. Environmental activists from across the UK and elsewhere on the continent have also embarked on a long journey on foot to reach the UN Climate Change Conference in Glasgow.
Flocks of sheep are on the streets of Madrid. The animals have made their way through the center of the Spanish capital to follow ancient migration routes. Shepherds accompanied their sheep and goats moving through the streets of the Spanish capital. They actually marked a centuries-old annual tradition that began in 1994. The event allows shepherds to migrate their cattle from summer to winter pastures. They do so based on a deal struck in 1418 that allows the animals to walk through the city freely. The event attracts hundreds of people. It was canceled. cancelled last year due to the pandemic, but this year many locals came out to watch.
Philippines is among the countries facing the soaring plastic waste crisis. However, a group of recyclers are working hard to tackle the problem, turning the waste into building materials. The group is called the Plastic Flamingo, or simply the PLAF. They gather bottles, single-use sachets, and snack food wrappers. The waste is then shredded and molded into post-add planks that can be used for decking and fencing. Their products are also durable enough to make disaster relief shelters and urban furniture. The group says the coronavirus pandemic has worsened the plastic waste problem, sparking a rush for protection equipment. Their disposal is a matter of concern now.
Because of the plastic problem we're currently facing, the pandemic, the huge accumulation of plastic use, there's also improper disposal. People are unaware on, you know, how do I dispose these plastics? Where do I dispose of them? So at the same time, we give that avenue also, that instead of putting it in landfills or oceans in general, you know, you give it to the PLAF, you give it to recycling centers like us, and we would recycle these, upcycle them into better products.
The PLAF says surging online shopping is also another problem that they try to address. The group has collected over 100 tons of plastic waste since it started the business in 2019. However, they still have a lot to do. A UN report says some 300 million tons of plastic waste are produced annually, with South Asian countries accounting for 60% of it. North Macedonian Zoo has a new inhabitant. It may be small, but it has certainly sparked a big amount of joy. The baby marmoset was born 3 weeks ago. Its parents are super protective of their precious offspring. That's why zoo staff have not been able to get close to the baby and determine if it's a male or a female. The tiny primate will be given a name after its sex is known. Marmosets are the world's smallest monkeys. On average, they are about 13 centimeters long and weigh up to 100 grams. The adorable animals can be found in a number of countries in the Americas.
The hustle and bustle of modern life has made it difficult to communicate with nature the way humans used to do a few decades ago. Now a giant statue in the state of New York reminds us of the importance of lending an attentive ear to our surroundings. The massive statue named Water's Soul is located along the Hudson River. The woman's head, with her index finger pressing on her lips, seems she's asking bystanders to maintain silence. It's a work of 66-year-old Spanish artist Juanme Palenza. He says the message of his work is, quote, to call on people to listen to the profound noise of the water talking to us. Water's Soul was made of polyester resin, fiberglass, and marble dust at a Barcelona studio. It was later shipped to its Jersey City site for assembly. The sculpture is 24 meters tall.
Heard of Iran's stellar wrestling achievements or about its soccer team, but that's not all. Another sport has grabbed attention too. Golfers now competing during Iran's national golf tournament in Tehran. This year, 90 participants from around the country played on a very unique golf course. It has only 13 holes instead of the standard 18, but that hasn't stopped golf enthusiasts playing the 13 holes and then repeating the last five to complete the tournament. The good news is that the golf course might not stay so small for long. Iran's Golf Federation hopes to bring in more people interested in golf, but for this to happen, the infrastructure must be provided first.
We don't have the space to use the 350 instructors to train the 3,000 registered men and women across the country. so we decided to build a national academy off the golf course. Course number 18 will be used in a competition venue during tournaments and as a training and education venue during non-competition times.
When the course was built decades ago in northern Tehran, it had 5 more holes. But over the years, fairways were laid across parts of the field, reducing playable footprint. Tehran's golf club has about 300 members, half are women. Golf has been around in Iran for over a century, and most of the courses are in southern provinces.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trend news, and more from every corner of the world.
Concerned about endangered animals? If yes, then it will be good news that a Mexican zoo has welcomed a newborn zebra. It belongs to the most threatened of the 3 species of zebra in the world. The foal made a public appearance Thursday, 10 days after it was born at a zoo in northern Mexico. It's about 50 centimeters tall. Its weight, between 10 to 15 kilograms. The newborn equine raises hopes for the conservation of the imperial zebra species.
We are the only zoo in Mexico that has this species of zebra. Unfortunately, it is an endangered species. Here at the zoo, we are doing everything possible to preserve and produce them so that in the future, we can repopulate some other parks.
The imperial zebra is native to Africa. It is the largest of the wild equids, the family of horses, donkeys, and other animals. Currently, there are less than 2,500 of imperial zebras in the wild. That's blamed on the destruction of their habitat, illegal hunting, and lack of food.
The world's largest Ferris wheel has opened to public in the United Arab Emirates. Dubbed the Dubai Eye, the wheel takes the visitors to a height of 250 meters. Feast their eyes on the city's skyline. That is almost double the height of the iconic London Eye and over 80 meters taller than the high roller in the U.S. city of Las Vegas. Each full rotation of the giant structure takes 38 minutes. The city put on a spectacular firework and light display to celebrate the opening.
The 38th edition of the International Short Film Festival has kicked off in the Iranian capital, with some 63 films from 32 countries competing in the event. The festival has for the first time turned into an Oscar qualifying event, giving winning entries a shot at the Academy Awards. This is being held at Tehran's famous Iran Mall cinema complex, and it will showcase short feature, documentary, and experimental works. 5 Iranian films and 58 from abroad are selected for the grand prize, and the winner will be presented to the Academy for possible Oscar nomination. The jury has members from Iran as well as Italy, Japan, and France. The festival will be running until October 23rd.
Natural disasters often disrupt normal life, but that's not the case with an Indian couple who got married despite their town being submerged by floodwaters. The couple, identified by local media as health workers in Kerala State, managed to reach a temple for the wedding in a giant cooking pot. They could be seen smiling and waving in their ceremonial clothes while two of their relatives were steering the pot. The couple reportedly borrowed the pot from the temple, saying that was the only option available. The pair was unwilling to postpone their big day, adding an unforgettable story to a country that is famous for many incredible things.
called the Crying Room tries to tell its visitors in Spain. The Crying Room is part of a building located in central Madrid. It's free and open to the public. The Crying Room aims to remove the stigma attached to mental health, crying, and seeking help. It offers a wide range of services, from a corner to crying, to a phone with a list of psychologists people can call. Motivating messages are also visible on the walls. People have hailed the initiative, saying it helps them speak out about their negative emotions.
I think it's an excellent idea to visualize the widespread of the mental health issue. And I think it's a really fun take on it to call it the crying room because of the Spanish expression, if you want to cry, go to the crying room. So it's kind of stigmatized to cry in Spain, as in many other countries. So I wanted to take part in this this visualization of the problem.
The Crying Room was opened in an effort to raise awareness about mental health and well-being. Official data in Spain showed that around 40% of people had symptoms of depression last year. Another 30% experienced anxiety.
The first movie in orbit in the making. Two Russian nationals who travel to the International Space Station to shoot scenes of that movie are now back on Earth. The Soyuz MS-18 spacecraft carrying an actress and a film director undocked from the ISS early Sunday and successfully touched down in Kazakhstan about 3 hours later. The film crew, along with a veteran astronaut, blasted off from the Russian leased Baikonur Cosmodrome earlier this month. They spent 12 days in the ISS to shoot the scenes. The mission beats a Hollywood movie project starring Tom Cruise. The mission adds to a long list of firsts for Russia's space industry.
Materials and methods are vital for an artist who combines them to create a masterpiece. Well, a Brazilian artist has used an unusual material to create a huge, dazzling artwork. Mondano has drawn a mural measuring 1,000 square meters using ashes from the burned Amazon rainforest. The artwork on the side of a building in the city of Sao Paulo depicts a firefighter standing near the scenes of deforestation, blazes, and dead animals. Mondano says he traveled extensively to feel that sadness and, more importantly, to collect ashes from it for his paintings. He says his aim is to call attention to the environment in his home country, where thousands of wildfires break out each